Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Force Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report. And you were just treated to some karaoke by Chopper.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. That is not Chopper. That is Ken Napsok making beautiful mouth noises.
Oh, Chopper, my relationship with you has gone from disdain to absolute love.
Yeah, and I think in this surprise appearance, this was a pretty restrained Chopper.
On my second viewing, I was actually bummed that it was a restrained Chopper.
I had the same thing. It's like, did I miss some moment of some like really big wild Chopper stuff? Like, no, about as far as he goes is saying, uh-oh, in his Chopper voice.
Yeah, I think, 19, 17 or so years later when we meet him, 16 or so, whatever, you guys all know the math. I think he's a little that older and cares less type of Chopper. I'll say what I want to say. I'm Chopper.
Oh, yeah. He's been through a lot by then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have more Chopper thoughts?
No. Oh, I mean, I'm sure we will, but it was just a welcome return from an old friend that I did not like in season one.
I was right there with you. I believe we both called him a fart bot,
mm-hmm.
but that fart bot stole our hearts.
He did.
Very happy to see him. Let's dive into this. This is a very different episode. We're talking about episode 11 of The Bad Batch. It is called Devil's Deal, written by Tamara Betcher-Wilkinson, directed by Stuart Lee, a director known in Star Wars animation. Once again, very consistent in episode length, around 25 minutes of actual content, unless you really, really love knowing all of the voice actors from all of the regions where it's played. Then you have even more minutes of content to enjoy. Ken, there are only 5 episodes left. Do you have any sense right now of where this is going? What is the big climax of season one in your mind?
I want to say some kind of confrontation with Crosshair, Rampart in that way. And this episode both threw me off the path a little bit, but then when you think about it, no, we're right on that, the rebellion growing in its own way. And I don't mean the rebellion with a capital R, but just the rebellion around the galaxy is already starting, and the Bad Batch is going to be more and more involved, which we want Bad Batch to make that big choice beyond just they're doing runs for Sid here, which is put a pin in that idea there of Sid being involved in a lot of these things. So, yeah, I think we're heading towards that kind of season one confrontation where the fight truly is on.
Yeah, I'm feeling like the Crosshair dynamic is going to be resolved, and I still kind of feel like maybe some of the big issues, maybe the fate of Kamino, maybe the Bad Batch deciding, you know, who they really want to be in this new galaxy, maybe some of those big picture things aren't going to be entirely decided, and it is going to really end not with a cliffhanger, but with the Bad Batch dealing with Crosshair in that relationship, and then really being fully formed as a unit with Omega and looking toward the future. You know, maybe it will end with them sort of accepting, like, yeah, whatever we do, we're going to be a part of this rebellion, because that's the reality of the galaxy right now. We can't avoid it. Maybe that. But it is really making me feel like there's that this is being constructed with lots of room for future seasons.
Yeah, it really is, because it is doing a great job of setting that table for the galaxy as it is right now, and all these new characters and, well, not new, but returning characters and planets coming in to just really paint that big picture. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Some different dishes set on the table. So let's talk about the dishes in Devil's Deal. What was your overall reaction? Did you love it, like it, struggle with it? This was a really different episode. The Bad Batch, who you might know from the title of the show, were barely in the episode. So how did you feel?
A cameo. This was at the same time one of my favorite little chapters in the entire animated side of the Star Wars saga. Really was. Really just a wonderful episode that pulls from things. Yeah, you already know, but I think if you're just seeing this for the first time, you get it. And they're always aware of that. So that worked for me. And then, I say oddly frustrating in the sense that the episode ended the first time I saw it, and we end on Hera. And I can, you know, I got it. I loved the episode. And I just was like, oh man, just seemed weird to kind of sidestep the Bad Batch for me. However, we always say here, give it a minute, right? Think about it. Don't make your sweeping judgments yet. Go back. And the story clearly will continue. And I think this quote unquote lack of Bad Batch won't be felt at season's end, because I think this moves the entire story forward. Like you and I were just talking about the big picture that the Bad Batch is in. And I think this will just not just make more sense, it just will feel more right at the end of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I had that, like, I'm tuning in to watch Bad Batch, and I'm excited to see, you know, what weird thing Wrecker will do, how much Mantel Mix he'll eat, great tech line. We'll see more Echo. You know, hey, will Sid come up with some mean, clever nicknames? I'm all geared up for Bad Batch, right? To actually see the Bad Batch. So then when this comes on and the episode's going on and it's clearly like, wow, this is from a different perspective. Yeah. I missed the Bad Batch in this week. But in terms of the big picture of what this is doing for the whole show, for the storytelling of Star Wars, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah,
so much that I can just put aside, like, yeah, I personally missed the Bad Batch because I got I was excited to spend some time with my buddies, but I will next week.
This is similar, maybe not one for one kind of the same, but the idea of you know, going back to Star Wars Rebels and the Maul Kenobi, not just the episode, but kind of some of the stuff with Maul did kind of, you know, was like over here to the right. And then at the end of the day, like it's some of our favorite stuff, but also just so part of the core themes of that show. And I think this kind of served that purpose.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what I liked about it is it moved Bad Batch even closer to the Clone Wars in that it felt a little bit more like the Clone Wars approach, that Clone Wars definitely does have main characters as a spine, but it's an anthology show. And, you know, especially if you were watching it week to week, when you tuned in, like, maybe you're going to get Anakin, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan, or who knows, maybe you're just going to spend this entire episode with a droid or Hattie Mundi, you know, you don't know. So I kind of liked a little bit of that anthology vibe returning. Mm-hmm. I understand people saying, like, well, it's not an anthology show. It's called The Bad Batch.
Yeah.
But I like that vibe for myself. And I think for me, one of the things that I was really intrigued by since the very beginning is this idea of the Bad Batch as interesting characters to explore, but also just tour guides for this horrific era. And this every episode of this podcast where we discuss it, I'm really excited about. This is really painting the picture of how all of these different key people, key locations react to the horrifying reality of what the Empire is versus what they claim to be. Mm. And this really, really just put that on the table of, yeah, that's not a little sub theme. Mm-hmm. That's a large point. You know, that great poster they released where it's got our main characters, but then the giant hologram of the Emperor floating ahead, like, floating above them all, as like, that poster's playing fair. This story is about the Bad Batch, the titular characters, but it is also the story of the whole galaxy dealing with the sudden terror of the Empire. And I was just really happy to see that they were just fully embracing that is a big part of what the show is.
Yeah, and there's some very, very important moments and realistic moments in this one with Champ Syndulla that we're going to talk about that go back to what you talk about of, let's really look at what's going on and these characters you love and these arcs you've loved in the Clone Wars, and some of them come back in Rebels. But now we're going to actually go to the turning of the page and what that meant and how these characters dealt with the here and now of the Empire coming in. And it really, that was really effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that if you're just watching The Bad Batch, this is an effective episode because Hera is a great guide through this and it makes this great bond with Omega. But if you're a long-term fan, you know, certainly you're excited by this Hera prequel from Rebels, right? But for us, having relatively recently watched some of those early seasons of Clone Wars for our Clone Wars Report show, like, I was thrilled to suddenly realize, like, I am watching a pretty direct sequel to the episode Liberty on Ryloth. Like, we'll talk about it in the canon section. They're like direct quotes from Cham and from Orn Frita that you could do an ironic jump cut to this episode. And it's really rewarding.
Yeah. Who doesn't love a good ironic jump cut?
An ironic jump cut of like, I swear we won't do this. Oh, we're doing it. Last big picture thing for me of overall reaction is, even though Bad Batch were basically a cameo in the episode, I do feel like they're really being set up to show up next week. But what they were doing is so important. Hunter is still kind of not making a concrete decision about what he thinks the squad should be, other than, you know, a family that includes and protects Omega. He's really clear on that. But he's resisting all these nouns, and yet he is being nouns.
Yeah.
In this episode, directly nouns that have been brought up and challenged before. He is an arms dealer for a rebellion.
Yeah.
And he's saying, he's, you know, Echo's like, I don't want to be an arms dealer. And Hunter's been like, we're not getting involved with any of these, you know, rebellions yet. We're just trying to keep our head down, make some money. And I think the fact that is what is happening to the Bad Batch is a big part of the story of the characters, too, that not making a choice is a choice. I feel like that's a big part of the storytelling of this era, in the fact that the Bad Batch hasn't really made a choice about what they're going to do or how they're going to function. They're just trying to keep their heads down by running arms for a rebellion against the Empire.
Yeah.
Like, you made a choice, even though you haven't acknowledged that you've made a choice.
Yeah. Not only is it just kind of a cameo of the Bad Batch, but they're just, you know, it's interesting. They are just kind of there, right, for this essential funding of a fledgling rebellion. So I loved it. It just worked even more of just like Hunter kind of looking around like, yeah, I guess the kid can visit the ship. What do we we're just doing a job, right?
This is just a job like any other. Yep.
Yeah. And again, we talk about Sid. Sid has had all kinds of missions and all kinds of contexts. But yeah, she knew the Jedi. And I've seen a lot of people already discuss, like, I don't know. She seems to be taking a lot of calls from people who need some help to fight the Empire, or at least push back.
Yeah, if that's who needs arms right now, it could be just like, hey, that's what I do. But yeah, but if she was an informant to the Jedi, she might have some opinions.
Yeah, and I'm not even, that's not even a prediction for me. Just like, I do love putting those little pieces down. We'll see where they go.
Absolutely. I think we covered big picture feelings about the fact that this was a really different story from a really different perspective. The Bad Batch is not the main characters of this episode. Do you have any other thoughts on that? Because I know that's going to be a challenge for some fans.
No, yeah, I don't have that. If you want this to always be Bad Batch, again, like you said, it's in the title. We get it. And this made me, I represent a lot of Star Wars fans that we discussed it here before, of just like, hey, they were going to do a show about the Bad Batch. I guess we'll see. I don't know. And then I just continue to love everything they do. And now this week made me miss them. You had talked about it too, but just like missing them, which is one of those things where you're like, oh, maybe I do love them. And and maybe just kind of revel in that for a second and as it all ties in. But again, you know, like some parts of the country that you don't like the weather, wait a few minutes, you know, just give these stories a second, wait a few minutes, see where they connect and see where the big picture takes you.
Yeah, I choose to view it as a positive that I missed the Bad Batch, that they might be tour guides to this story of the sudden tyranny of the Empire. But I also really, really, really like my tour guides, and I'm okay missing them for a week. I think the other thing for me is I know that there has been a discussion among fans about, you know, bringing characters back and feeling like even the Mandalorian season two. And now this show is not that the main characters are sometimes there to host, you know, all your returning favorites. And I totally respect opinions are opinions. And if any fan doesn't like that, then your opinion is correct for you because it is yours. But I think for me, this is also just a an opportunity to practice Jedi acceptance.
Right.
That this is what Star Wars does. Star Wars animation in particular, and what they've done for a long time is bring characters back, draw connections, do big generational storytelling, have characters that you've met before, that audiences have met before, who don't seem connected, suddenly meet and inspire one another. And for me, I think that it just objectively studying the stories, this has been happening for a long time. This is kind of, I think, what you're signing up for when you're watching a show like this.
I agree with that. And yeah, we're always, we want to be super accommodating to all thoughts and opinions here. This is not so much of a review of this episode, it's a discussion of what's going on. And one of the reasons we do that is it allows us to kind of look at all sides of it. And yeah, there is like, all right, we're going here, we're going here, we're going here. But as a Star Wars fan, I can make jokes about it, but it's like, to me, that doesn't make the world smaller. It helps me focus on these characters I already love, but also their perspectives, their journeys, their experience, and then provides these real world examples of, man, what would I do in that situation? And therefore it just kind of expands the heart of the story. But again, if you're just like, it's Hera, you know, I guess I understand. I guess I don't mean that to be, you know, an insult, but yeah, I don't want the story of the janitor. And I was a dishwasher for 3 years. I don't want the dishwasher at the cantina. I want the main characters. That's why I come to Star Wars.
Yeah.
I don't want Godfather 4 to be about the neighbor.
You know? Yes.
The Corleone family.
Yes. And I'm with you. I was excited when I realized, wow, we are going deep. Connections to many different points in the Star Wars story. When you can get me to cheer for Orn Frita, something's going right, I think.
Yeah, Phil Lamar voices him so well. But it was funny. It felt like a Rebels episode done in Clone Wars, but all brand new. It was all those things. It was a Star Wars animated stew. And if you don't like that, I get it. But I liked everything in it.
It's all connected. We're all connected is one of the themes of Star Wars, and it is, I think, a truth of modern Star Wars storytelling. With, again, respect to people, if you just don't like it, that is, of course, understandable. Let's dive into the big themes and ideas of this particular episode. Ken, what did you think was at stake in this episode?
Oh, man. Okay. This is always, I feel, you know me, I always go to these things that I connect with, and there's this big stuff about I'll say you're compromising your morals, or what are you going to do? And the worldviews and what your goals are. And now the empire's coming in to maybe change it all. There's these big things at play, but I boiled all that down for me. The focus on the idea of trust. And Cham kind of having this idea of, hey, we have to trust the empire. Then he specifically kind of trusts Hauser. And then when trust is broken, which is what, his wife, Elena, is that how to say it?
I believe so. Yeah. So,
you know, what do you do? And you know, what is Hauser? I'm wondering about Hauser. Here he is. He's still got some identity. He's still got some individuality. What's he going to do? Is his trust going to broken? I'm interested to see if they just leave him, or is he part of what might happen next? So to me, there was a lot of, you know, what is trust? How do you gain trust? How do you give trust? All tied into this very realistic kind of Champs and Dula point of view, because he is exhausted. And that's why I say he's willing to hear the empire out. And it, but here's the thing is we know, right? We know the empire. We're in the background going, don't do it. Don't do it. Because we know Cham doesn't know. He doesn't know what this right. He might feel it. And I think he's challenging on that. There's even Gobi kind of says, I think you know what to do, but you just, you know, you just don't want to face it.
Yeah.
And you just might not want to see it. I think he says a lot, but I was really moved by the moments when Cham is just like, yeah, but didn't we fought for this? Is this what we fought for? And I want to trust, but what do I do when it's not there? And I thought that was just kind of, it got me on a real level.
Yeah, no, I love what you're saying. I think that sense of trust was really powerful. I think there is this theme running through it of the importance of family and the longing for family, and I think trust goes along with that. And is family, you know, a strength, or is family a weakness? I loved Hauser, because this is the first clone that we've seen who seems to have some amount of empathy still. Mm-hmm. And you get the sense that he has been there, you know, for years, since the early part of the war, since the events of Liberty on Ryloth, and that he has been by the Syndulla's side, and that he's kind of watched Hera grow up, you know. And that Hauser almost maybe sees Hera as a member of the family. And now that's, I think, part of what's really great and compelling about the cliffhanger is Rampart is, you know, telling Hauser she should be easy to track down. Go get her. So yeah. I think everything that you're feeling about trust and, you know, is Cham at all right to try to put his trust not in the Empire, but maybe the clones? Probably not. Maybe Hauser? Probably not. Is a really, really great visceral emotional thread in this episode that I think is going to continue to the next episode.
Yeah, and I like that you kind of put a little of finer tune there on my point of just like, again, we know it's the Empire Greys. We know it's Palpatine, Vader, and the Death Star, and all these things that come. But in that moment, it is the clones. He invokes the name of the clone army there. They saved us and all those things. And that's what Cham is trying to, you know, sift through right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I was pulling out some of the same things as being the most exciting, the most interesting, emotionally relevant. I think I was thinking of it from the perspective of this episode is showing us what different people are fighting for. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Cham is so intent on he is fighting for peace. That is what Gobi is fighting for. That's what Alina Syndulla is fighting for. They're just not agreeing with Cham that they've reached the goal. We want a free Ryloth. We want a family that can live in peace, but we got to fight for it a little bit longer. And then in contrast, I feel like a lot of our bad guys, Rampart and in his own way, Orin Frita, and even Crosshair, they're all fighting for control. They're selling this idea of peace, but their idea of peace is having total control and having no one question them and you know, holding onto their power. So I really saw this idea of sort of peace versus control.
Yeah, that's great. And with the Cham line, he and I want the same things, but different in approach is something that's at the heart of the rebellion going forward too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, to dive into this just a little bit more, the most compelling thing about this episode is what you were talking about of Cham is in denial, right? Yeah. In my opinion, and we've always known Cham is like, you know, hey, if you're going to do a Star Wars ranked of resistance fighters who will not bend, who will not back down, Cham is right up there competing with Saw Gerrera for the number one spot. Right.
Yeah.
has been our Star Wars understanding of him. So that's partially what I like about having an episode like this that is between Clone Wars and Rebels, in revisiting a character and surprising us and reminding us that just because a character is like this at this point in their life and this point in their life doesn't mean there's not a different moment for them. And it is so powerful and so believable to see Unbreakable, won't back down, Cham Syndulla just be in denial because he wants to believe that this piece could be real for his planet. But I also think really, really specifically for his daughter. Like, I think he is lying to himself for Hera, you know?
Yeah, no, my hope is that you won't ever have to live a life like mine. It's one of my favorite little scenes in the last few years in Star Wars animated or live action programming. I love that little moment because I think it's what you're talking about. And, you know, I think you're politely dancing around it, but it invokes Luke and Last Jedi. This idea of, yeah, the hero or the person you know has these little moments of realistic doubt or failure and confirms maybe who they are. And maybe we all need those moments to gut check and challenge ourselves. And yeah, denial's not the wrong term here. I get where Cham is at when he's leaning over the railing, just going, this, it's exhausting and it's dangerous and people die. And, you know, you got Hauser, a clone buddy, going, hey, you fought for this. That's a great statement, right? This is what you fought for.
And you did it, buddy.
Yeah, you did it. You got the finish line. And he's got a, Are they still on the race?
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's got these great real world influences to me of, you know, certainly American resistance to World War II. Like, you call a war the war to end all wars.
Right.
And then whether or not the evidence is there, you just want to believe that your kids aren't going to have to fight another one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that definitely does speak to the generational story of conflict in Star Wars in general, but this is just such a great, you know, grace moment. Grace moment isn't the right word. It's just such a great coloring that even somebody is as strong as Cham can give into this, right? So I love everything you're saying. He's got this relationship with Hauser. I think he specifically lies to himself, I think, about the clones, right? Because he's real resistant in Liberty on Ryloth. He predicts this, like, they're not going to leave.
Right. Know? Yes.
And we can talk a little bit more about that in our canon section. So he, back then, just a couple years ago, he's ready to fight exactly this. But now he's tired. He wants to believe that Hera's going to be able to grow up in peace. And I think he's lying to himself by placing that trust specifically in the clones, because he's not being like, yeah, this big government's going to be great. He hasn't suddenly changed his mind and thinks that Orn Prita is awesome. Mm-hmm. What he says to those people, to his people, are, but when our losses mounted and the enemy closed in, the clone army came to our aid. We would not be here today if it wasn't for them. No love for I'm a gun die there, but but besides that, it really is investing in this idea of, I'm not saying to trust Orn Prita, really. I'm not saying to trust the Empire. These clones, they fought by our sides. We can trust them, right? And then it becomes clear that it is all for Hera. And then I think, really interestingly, when Cam finally breaks, it's because Hera is threatened.
Yeah, yeah.
And the illusion is shattered.
Yeah, and then even the actions and blaster barrel to Orn Frita's face and that kind of violence, potential violence, ends when it you know, you look back and you see Hera staring at it. It's all about her in this situation and in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on kind of the control side of it, I really love that this whole series is really taking time to show us on screen those ongoing manipulations of the Empire. They want control, and they're selling it as peace, right? Rampart and Orn Frita saying, the refinery is going to be great for the people. We got you jobs, and we'll keep you safe. When really, like, we are mining your planet against your will, and we're already controlling you and saying what you can and can't do.
There was a great little line from Orn Frita: with peace comes prosperity. And it's like, sure, but for you, what is that? Where's that prosperity going to come from? The resources, the people, and what's going to happen here?
Yeah, and Orn Frita continues to be this criticism of an indulgent politician who doesn't truly care about the people, but just cares about keeping themselves in power, having riches, unlimited access to Nunal eggs.
Yes.
Which is a treat he enjoys. And I really like that he is fighting to keep his position of power. He is still afraid and jealous of the natural leadership skills of Cham Syndulla. So all that really tracks well.
Oh yeah, just that base jealousy too. Yeah, and him of you know, hey, he literally being told from Rampart, you know, play your part. You're playing your part. Several times he says that, and Alan Ornfrito is probably just like, yes, I am. No idea that he's being played. You know, we all got a little bit of Dooku in us. Just no idea we're being played until the end.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think the final thing for me on this big picture theme of peace versus control. You know, Crosshair is under the Empire's control, certainly by some amount of inhibitor chip, and we don't know how much else without inhibitor chip. And Hauser's, I think, really still trying to kind of play it as like, no, this can work out.
Mm-hmm.
He's in denial, like Cham is, but he is helping the Empire seize control.
Yeah. I'm in a tough spot, Cham. You are, Hauser. You are.
It really is. Do you have other big themes or ideas you wanted to explore?
Let me roll through. There was some Cham mentions change and change being hard. I think that's part of what we talk about, a little bit of that gut check moment too, and just kind of trying to move forward. But this one, I'll just submit this one. We love the organic versus mechanical here, but now we have spiritual versus technical. I love that.
Yeah, no, I definitely wanted to talk about that in terms of a big Star Wars theme. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, I thought the other kind of big thread was just this idea of flight as freedom, right? This goes along with what Cham wanted for Hera, is he wants her to feel peace and freedom. And this beautiful through line of Hera dreaming of flying, that just amazing shot of her hand mimicking the bird's flight. Then that conversation that you're talking about with Omega, telling her that piloting isn't just like the logistics and the specs. It's a feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of this great emotional through line for me, where Cham is fighting to keep Hera safe, but it's got a little bit of synergy, I think, with Omega and her journey with Hunter and the rest of the Bad Batch, where we, as the audience, know, well, eventually she is going to find, she does have to fight war, and that is horrible and exhausting. We also know that she eventually gets to kind of fulfill her dreams, even within the horror of war, that she finds family and a sense of freedom, you know, on the Ghost, even during war, which is this kind of bittersweet, like, yeah, Cham, she's going to have to fight the battle, but she's going to find these things that she's dreaming of while she's doing it, too.
And this really makes me want to watch that Rebels episode where they kind of reconnect, and there's a lot of family issues that play later on, right? And just to see how it all connects, and father and daughter and parents and kids, and a lot of that was at play here. So and Flight is Freedom they showed that beautifully. The great little touching moments.
Yeah. Absolutely lovely. So let's talk about those bigger picture morality, story, perspective of Star Wars. You mentioned the organic versus the mechanical, the technical versus the spiritual. That was a great little discussion between Omega and Hera about what flying is.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the line in particular I wrote down. Hera says to Omega, the instruments help guide you, but you plot your course. That's one of those lines that sounds like flying, but also just the reminder that Star Wars is a coming of age story philosophically about how you get where you want to go.
I think that's a Journey lyric or something like that. good karaoke stuff. Yeah, no, there's a beautiful synergy there, right? And we see it at play in a lot of Star Wars stories, and it's a feeling, all those kind of things. And Luke turned off his targeting computer. It's so powerful, and the organic versus mechanical. It's why we celebrate it here. It's one of your favorite things, Joseph, I know, but it's powerful. And this was a moment of synergy. This is like, yeah, you must be connected to both. And now Omega being on Kamino and now under the tutelage of tech, Wrecker's all emotion, we know. So she's getting lessons. But I thought it was a great kind of co-learning moment for both of them. Real beautiful.
Yeah, and it was a nice moment of intuition and instincts matter for everyone in the in the story of Star Wars, not just Force users, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of great, you know, Hera and Omega, this coming of age, you know, dreaming of exploration, purpose, belonging, all that stuff was great. The other big thing for me is just yet another real concrete reminder that the Empire is very bad.
Yes.
Not just a different point of view, to just really drill down on what is actually happening in this episode is Rampart greatly injures, almost, you know, assassinates a senator to frame a beloved leader so that the Empire can mine the planet for their resources without resistance. I mean, just to really take a step back and like, it's not just, well, they're, some of the rules are kind of limiting, but at least we have order. Like the at least we have order thing is a lie, right? It's not order. It is people grabbing power. Rampart shot a senator who should have legitimate power, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote down the Empire's foot is stepping down. We're literally seeing it happen here. In the refinery being online for the greater good, and they can sell it as they want. But and that is what I just I think going into the show, you, me, and a lot of listeners and Star Wars fans were interested in seeing this kind of stuff in the show. But now that it is actually there, going back to some of the first couple episodes, I love just seeing these characters, you know, and these worlds you love, and Free Ryloth. And if you're a fan of the book, Lords of the Sith, and you know where they get to, I just love going to these moments where everyone, the water, the boil is happening and you're in the pot. And are you realizing it? Are you going to get out? Are you feeling it? It's really compelling.
Yeah, yeah, that is a great and terrifying metaphor, because this is a fun show with charm and heart. But now I'm going to think about it the next time we sit down to watch next week's episode. Is like, yeah. I'm ready to boil in the water of terror.
Yeah, we are all lobsters in the Empire's stew.
Exactly. Any other big Star Wars themes before we take our break?
Other than I just don't want lobster stew, but that's another conversation. No, there's no some big stuff, giant big stuff. This episode really had a ton of heart, and heart that connects to the big questions that Star Wars is always asking us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And kind of went back to the Clone Wars tradition where like, yeah, we're going to talk moments of action, moments of comedy. But this was not a whiz bang thrill ride. This was much like the Clone Wars would do and Rebels. Like, this is mostly about family and politics. And that is, you know, those things are important in Star Wars. It's a big part of the story.
Absolutely is. It's about family.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. We are going to take a pot. I was going to say take a break from boiling in our pot of stew, but I said we're going to take a pot. So we're going to take a quick pot, and we will be right back.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs.
no deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back from our break. Not our pot, our break. I've got a handle on it now. We are returning from our break to discuss all of our favorite little moments, action, comedy, big canon connections. Ken, let's talk about action. There wasn't a ton of action moments in this episode, but what were your favorites?
Which is an interesting point, because the second time I view it is when I go for these detailed action moment notes and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, there's a lot to choose from. And then I was like, oh, yeah, no, there's a lot of talking in this one. I love Champ spearing the clone trooper off the speeder. Real thump, flips that spear in his hand and just kind of chucks it. That was good.
It was a great moment of action, and I just felt it emotionally too, of like Cham's like, okay, look, we need to put our weapons down. I think we've won that piece that we really wanted. Nope. All right, then I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And yeah. Watch out for anyone in my way. I am an expert space lance thrower.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Cham's lance throwing was definitely one of the big ones for me. Mm-hmm. In that big burst of action at the end, one of the other moments I like is that one clone's just very bad day, that they're trying to speed away, and some of the Twi'lek resistance fighters shoot him off his bike. The bike explodes, the speeder explodes, but he manages to get off. He just climbs to his feet in time to be zapped in the back by Cham.
Yeah. Okay. Is that the, yes. Okay. So that's the other. So I love that moment. What I love specifically about it is Cham calmly walks up to him. Like, he's just taking a nice stroll in the park, and it's like, I've done this before. I am a fighter. It was kind of chilling in a way, and I love that little beat.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, and I think, you know, it's sad when we realize Cham is being played, but all the resistance fighters have that, like, yeah, no, this is kind of the old story of, you know, fighting people on their home turf. Like, they know that canyon, they know their moves. There's a lot of confidence in the resistance fighters. And then it's, you know, sad when we realize, like, yeah, they were played.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. Other action moments for you?
None specific. There was a lot about it. I mean, this is, again, we'll say it. We said it, a beautiful episode. It's, even the action was shot well, even when Crosshair shoots Gobi's ship and the engine explodes. Even that was really beautiful for me this week.
Yeah, that was a great and terrifying little action moment. This is a weird one to put in there, but it's my final action moment, is the brutal Orn Frita headshot.
You're not sure. You're not wrong. I loved it.
It was. You knew that Rampart was planning something, right? Mm-hmm. He's getting Crosshair in position and the way he was playing everything. But just like the suddenness of it and the brutality of it. I literally did a whoa. Like, it was one of those storytelling moments, story through action, that is like really bold and really decisive. That is how far Rampart is willing to go. And then I immediately thought, like, finally, someone's head has a worse day than Wrecker's. And that was kind of a nice break.
Yeah. Someone, poor Wrecker. He got to wake up. That was great. Yeah. No, the Orn Frita thing, we'll talk about the canon connection of all. I really like that moment and kind of want it to go one way. I'll just say that.
Okay. All right.
Vague, you just jogged something in my mind of the first time I saw it last night when we were, and I just was like, yeah, I hope he's dead.
Yeah. We'll put a pin in that. Not in Orn Frita's head. We'll put a pin in that topic and we'll get to it when we get to canon. Does that sound good?
Totally, totally, totally the right thing to do.
Excellent. Then let's move on from a senator being used as a tool to be shot to moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness. I don't think there was many moments of comedy in this episode as there are in some, but I did definitely think there were great moments of comedy and whimsy and weirdness. What were some moments for you?
I'll just start with the whimsy of Hera. You mentioned the flight is freedom is a wonderful way to look at it, and just looking in the sky, seeing the birds and putting her hand up there and the great music cue and everything. That's just wonderful. It's magical. It's beautiful. It's got a lot of heart, but just kind of the whimsy of youth too. And even at one point she had these dreams. Like you said, she kind of, in a way, from a certain point of view, goes and really lives those dreams with great cost and great importance attached to it. She's just not tooling around the galaxy having fun, but I love those little moments. But then coming back later and just her learning to fly, I forget the exact line, but it's just like coming in at 126. Is that good? I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah, no, I think it worked really, really well for the emotions of this episode. And it just works really well for the character. It is one of the things that distinguishes Hera. She is a great, great pilot. So I thought that was great moments of whimsy and even the way that, you know, her Uncle Gobi plays her, like, I can't come along. I was like, all right, I was going to let you fly.
Yeah, yeah.
A very, very well done. A little manipulative there on Uncle Gobi, his part. But my first moment of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness, and I kind of think it's all three, is Orn Frita is his nervous habit of stroking his leku when he's nervous. When he's upset that his speech isn't going well and knows that everybody's going to respond to Cam basically saying the same thing but better. And he's just up there in front of all the Twi'leks and Rampart and everybody just stroking away on his leku.
Who doesn't? Yeah, stroke your leku. Stroke your leku, Orn.
I would probably have that nervous habit, but I try not to do it in public.
It's weird. If I have a nervous conversation, I rub my left temple a lot. Just kind of scratch it. I can see it. So that's my...
That's good. You'll look like Columbo about to solve something then.
And another thing.
What are some other moments for you?
Well, I don't want to step on the tech stuff and the Omega stuff, but all of it, it was wonderful.
Yeah, that. So I wrote down the specific line. Omega says it in such a sort of a bouncy way when Hera asks her if she flies. Omega says, "Tech won't let me train until I can recite all the ship's specifications from memory." It is so good. It is so funny. It was one of those moments of Tech has a funny line too later about what feeling, but that was the line for me. That was like the best comedy line.
Yeah, no, Omega sets up the what feeling line, which I thought was great. Because Tech is genuinely like, what are you talking about? He probably is still talking about it as they were flying home.
I tried to look it up in the database. How do pilot feelings work?
Yeah, and then you can just imagine Tech and Omega having that conversation earlier of just, can I fly? Tech, well, do you know these specifications? Get memorizing.
Yeah. Well, it's just so that great, again, comedy of Tech legitimately having that perspective, but maybe there is that possibility of Tech being nervous to let somebody else fly because she clearly knows all of the instruments, right? Because she's giving Hera the tour. Right. And I sort of like that it is in Tech's personality, but also maybe a little bit of pedantic fear of like, okay, well, you know exactly what the hyperdrive is, but you need to memorize the model number of the wires that connect it to the nav computer before you can use it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very funny. The other Omega moment I really liked is when she was showing Hera around and saying, well, technically it's our gunner's mount, but when we're not getting chased or shot at, it's my room.
Yeah, love that. Yeah.
And the are you in some kind of trouble? I thought you were in trouble exchange was there was a little bit of like whimsy to that, but it was also like, oh, kids, you're all in trouble.
Yeah. Oh, no, you all are in trouble. Yeah. And that moment remind me, I don't want to get too real or dark, but just like, when parents have to do is the best job they can to not let the kids know that there's real life struggles going on. And at some point they're going to have to learn. And maybe that goes back to part of the lesson of the show for parents, from Cut and Sue. But I like that moment a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. That was about it for me. I mean, Chopper has the which is fun, but Chopper doesn't cut loose. He's not stealing replacement legs like that great Rebels episode yet.
He's really not. Yeah.
Any other moments for you?
No, I'm with you. That was kind of it, but all worth it for the Omega Tech stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, let's dive in then to canon lore connections to other episodes. There's a ton of stuff going on, a ton of characters we've seen before. I wanted to highlight a couple of the specific connections and get your thoughts on them, Ken.
Totally.
Because I feel like a couple of the episodes are implied, if not directly referenced. We've got the episode Supply Lines, which is kind of the earliest part of the Separatist droid invasion of Ryloth, where they're trying to get relief supplies from Toydaria. And that's a story with Bail and Jar Jar. But then we get the Jedi, I'm going to die, really trying to defend Ryloth. We have that whole Ryloth arc at the end of season one of Clone Wars, but specifically the third episode in that arc where Mace is the main Jedi, Liberty on Ryloth, where we see the plasma bridge that we see in the establishing shot of this episode, right? Of the city of Lesu. But the episode deals very much with Mace kind of trying to broker a compromise between Cham and Orn Frita, because Mace realizes that he can't take, and the Republic can't take the capital and kick Wat Tambor out without the help of the people who live there, without Cham Syndulla's help. And so Cham and Mace have this great conversation that I know you and I both highlighted and enjoyed discussing when we covered this episode on Clone Wars Report. Cham says to Mace, I don't trust Senator Ta, his plans for our world after the war. They're old political rivals. Cham knows that Orn Frita is selfish and looks out for himself first. Mace says that, maybe Republic soldiers will stay on Ryloth a little while after getting rid of the droids, you know, to keep the peace. And Cham says, another armed occupation is not a free Ryloth. How long before I'm fighting you, Master Jedi? Mm. And of course, he is not fighting the Jedi, but he is fighting the clones. Mm. And this was one of those jump cut moments, right? Or smash cut from Cham. You know that this isn't exactly not what you wanted. This is exactly what you feared would happen. That Orn Frita is supporting this idea of like, hey, the war's over. What if the clones just stay? What if more of them come? It's for your protection. And it only highlights to me how much Cham is in denial and how much he's desperate for the war to have mattered.
Yeah, that's a great flashback moment there to insert this jump cuts that you want here. This is great. A good reminder. And just then he makes me just feel his exhaustion even more.
Yeah. Yeah. And then later when Mace actually does manage to broker a compromise between Cham and Ornfrita, that dialogue is Ornfrita says, "The people have my promise that the clone army will leave once Ryloth is free of those droids." So that's another smash cut to an utterly broken promise. Like, don't worry, the clones are here to protect you while you work in a mine.
Yeah.
And Cham says he's not looking for power, that he only wants to see his people free. So Cham is sticking up to that. Like, he's not trying to run against Ornfrita for Senate. He just wants his people to be free. So Ornfrita, big liar. Cham, only lying to himself.
Yeah, you can clearly tell that those episodes, which are some of the first early, kind of great Clone Wars episodes, you can really tell those were probably studied and considered greatly.
Absolutely, absolutely. So then another big canon connection is, Hera and Chopper. So I want to zero in a little bit. This is, of course, the same voice actor for Hera, right?
Yep.
But she has more of a traditional Ryloth accent. How did you feel about that?
I liked it because it comes into play in that Rebels episode where they're dead, right? Doesn't she kind of breaks out the accent again, and that has meaning, importance, and good and bad ways of what she becomes and what she tries to distance herself from later on, and part of the feud with her father. But I really loved it here. I really thought everything about Hera was handled so well. Whimsy does come to mind, but just heart and beauty before, just the situation being this sweet, almost naive beauty before the darkness really comes into the galaxy in her own life, if that makes sense. So to see her at this point, just looking up and dreaming and just taking in the beauty of the galaxy, wonderful stuff, but adds so much weight to her story now. It's like, I kind of want to start picking up Rebels again,
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there are those two specific episodes that, I was focusing on the Clone Wars for the kind of the history between Cham and Ornfrita, but a lot with Hera and Chopper is like so looking forward to the Clone Wars, right? That, Chopper is called out as being a veteran of the Clone Wars, right? So that's great to see him, in that general era and probably in a little bit of better shape. And, maybe a little bit better mood. But that was great to see him in setting up so much for the future with a lot of these same characters in Rebels episodes. When Hera says to Omega that it's always been her dream to live on a starship, was that dancing too close to just being on the nose to you?
No, because kind of going back to what I was saying, it's just like you're going to get that, but life's sometimes those dreams you get, not the way you specifically dreamed. And so while there's some darkness and tragedy that's definitely coming in her life, there's also great, great victories, figurative and literal, I suppose, but just, knowing that this character is already on that journey. That's one thing that's big in Star Wars to me. It's like you're looking out on the twin suns and you're dreaming of something big, but you are already starting. Wherever you're going to go, you're already on that path. Hera's there. She's going to get there. She's going to learn that it's different, and that's actually better.
Yeah, and I certainly understand people who are like, okay, I don't like it when characters just describe exactly what they're going to do. This is sometimes some of the criticisms that come up with anything that's sort of a at all prequel, like, I think the same kind of thing where maybe some fans are frustrated with movie Solo because it explains things too much or sets things up too much. So I know that there's that sentiment out there. I get that and I respect that. I think for me, I have that moment for myself. It's like, is that too on the nose? And then for me, it just isn't, because I love specificity in characters. And I love this idea that, exactly as you're saying, this is the specific dream she has. Not just the being a pilot and a sense of freedom is very emotional and beautiful, but this is so concrete of like, damn, wouldn't it be cool to live on a starship and you're out there free and you can go where you need to go and you're with your family? And it is this great Star Wars story of, accept the things that you can't change and then take action on the things you can. Like, she can't help that this is the galaxy that she's in, that the Empire is doing this and that everybody else has to respond to it. But within that, she can make this dream come true.
Yeah. You're getting there, but in a different way, you know, going from your childhood dreams. It's something that always resonates with me of just like, sometimes I have to take stock and be like, oh, I'm doing exactly what I wanted to do. It's just along the way, there's cuts and bruises and scars and heartbreaks and joys. And, you know, you just don't know it. You're about to experience it, but you could end up kind of right where you wanted.
Yeah, no, it is really powerful. I gotta, I'm not going to dive into personal life, but I have a thing where I'm like, hey, I have to remind myself there's a thing happening that is what I wanted to happen. I just didn't picture it this way when I was a kid. So you got to be able to reframe. Thanks, Star Wars. Any other thoughts on Hera and Chopper?
It just was fun. I all these things we're saying about, hey, these characters come back and maybe you like it or not. Yeah, I totally get it. But I just think, It's not, I don't want to say the Filoni verse, because there's so many other people creating this show, and Dave's not on it day to day. We know, and he gets all the credit. We know, and he deserves it. But he has done, and his team, we'll say, has done a great job of creating these characters that you can slide back and forth on the timeline, and I think get to enjoy them in a new way and get more of their story. And when I saw it was Chopper, I let out kind of like a hey. Which, again, jokes aside, going back to season one of Rebels, I would not have guessed that that'd be in that position. And it's just, when you let Star Wars tell the story it wants to tell, and I think you'll be rewarded by these characters.
Yeah, agreed. Moving on then to a pretty major character in this episode, Uncle Gobi, Gobi Glee. He has popped up a lot of different places. He worked with Amagundai and the clones in that Supply Lines episode. He does appear in the Ryloth arc in the first season of Clone Wars. He features prominently in that book, Lords of the Sith. And if people aren't familiar with that book, Orn Frita also features prominently. We'll talk about that. But the Ryloth is being a problem. Palpatine and Vader go and go to Ryloth. And this is all about kind of this group of people, the Free Ryloth movement, trying to take out Vader and Palpatine. So if you're not familiar with that book, it really ties to these episodes.
Yeah. Lords of the Sith is one of my favorites still.
Yeah, me too. And I read that before we were reviewing books. So, you know, at some point, yeah. You know, if just we get bonus time in reality, if some magic happens and like, here's 57 extra days, we can review Lords of the Sith. Yeah. Then Gobi does continue to appear in the Rebels episodes, in the episode Homecoming, which is, I think, this that you're talking about, that episode, the initial reconnection between Hera and her father and Gobi and all these characters. And that's when they're stealing the cool quasar ship. And then there's the later episode, Hera's Heroes, which is about battling Thrawn and the Kalikori. And, you know, both of these episodes also mention this character of Alina Syndulla.
Yeah.
So a lot going on there. Any thoughts on Gobi?
No, just good to right from the start, and to have Crosshair staring across at him. I think I kind of knew what was coming. You know what I mean? I thought this would be a Bad Batch centric episode, but I think right then in my heart, I was like, oh, we're laying down the groundwork for what's to come here on Ryloth.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on then to Orn Frita, of course, named, because I believe that's one of Lucas's children, the way they said corn fritters is the history that I have heard of Orn Frita. He has a long history of greed and cowardice.
Yeah. Quite tracks,
a long one. He appears in the actual prequel films. He features in many Clone Wars episodes. And even if he's just a background character, he is always portrayed as somebody who is out to have the finest things, cling to his power, and not risk himself in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. He is then in this Lords of the Sith book, which obviously happens after the events of this episode of Clone Wars. So here's what's to talk about, Ken. Mm-hmm. The concern about that headshot.
Yeah.
And I'm taking it as, since they said specifically attempted assassination, that the Crosshair is shooting to wound, grievously, horribly wound, in order to frame Cham Syndulla. But I think he's going to live to be in Lords of the Sith. But some people are thinking that, no, there's going to be a massive canon change, right?
Yeah, which is fair to question and fair to wonder. And we've seen some of these little subtle changes here and there. That would be a big change for me. And if that's the case, and if next week it's Orn Frita's funeral and it starts the episode, then I will deal with that when I cross that canon bridge. right now, the second viewing specifically. Again, I was getting held up earlier. It's such a sudden, I mean, you see it kind of coming in a way, you get Rampart's up something, but just it was a sudden shot and a thunk, and it was really almost kind of aggressively violent for Star Wars in a way. That I was on board, and Lords of Sith is one of my favorite Star Wars books still, but I initially forgot, like, you know, in that moment, 12:30 at night, I was just like, oh God, they killed him. That's awesome. Then I thought, like, wait a minute. No, they can't. And it puts you in a weird spot. And sometimes you and I have been more on the side of let the story go the way the story needs to go. And so sometimes I have to either eat my own words or face my own words. And this could be next week, the funeral of Orn Frito, as predicted here in Force. Could be me challenging that. But the second viewing, attempted assassination, how to use that against Champ Syndulla, how to use that against just Ryloth and the people and cause problems, actually makes more sense to me. But we'll see. We'll see. Going to have to see where it lies.
Yeah, let Orn Frito, you know, massively wounded, parade out there saying, this is what was done to me, you know?
Yeah.
It is a good manipulation to keep the people of Ryloth in line. Yeah, I do think it's going to be an attempted assassination. I was right there with you, too, of like, it was so harsh and was like, wow, and so ends Orn Frito. And then I was like, oh, wait, no. I think this is a great way to look at some of the way that people have discussed canon fans, and I've seen some people who work at Lucasfilm express it this way, of, you know, the idea that canon is that an event happened, and then within the story exactly how it happened might be up to, you know, interpretation. So some of the changes we've seen, like, oh wow, Ahsoka's fight with Maul on Mandalore is different in the Ahsoka book than in the Clone Wars, but Ahsoka and Maul fought then, you know, kind of over the same things. Kanan and Depa Balaba were attacked by the clones on this planet during Order 66, but the exact events, that they shift a little bit. This would be the opposite of that, of it's not that, oh, well, Orn Frito died, but it shifts over years when he died. No, it's like... It would be a different event, right? It wouldn't be an interpretation of the event. It would be a different event. It would be he's dead and he's not in that book.
Indeed. Yeah.
And I kind of don't think they're going there myself.
Yeah. I mean, again, second viewing. I guess I think I was so shocked, maybe / happy of Orn Frito's death. I missed the attempted, but it's very deliberate. Very deliberate.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a couple other canon things here. I really did like that they clarified that this first mine, this refinery, is a Dunium mine. Mm. And Rampart is saying that we really need this material to rebuild parts of the galaxy affected by war. We know from a bunch of great canon storytelling in books and other places that Dunium is being aggressively mined specifically for the Death Star. This is introduced in Catalyst. It is followed up in the Thrawn trilogy. There's a Dunium mine on Lothal as well. So that really adds to the extra like layers of, yeah, no, the Empire's bad.
Yeah.
Because they're doing all this horrible thing to keep Ryloth under their thumb so they can mine their planet. And so they can mine their planet specifically to build a giant floating death ball.
Yeah, I mean, there it is right there, right? It's already started. The pot is boiling. Oh, there's that pot phrase again, that pot word. But it's I love that kind of connection. And that is one of those connections that's new modern canon, that was one of those schoolyard, especially after Revenge of the Sith, how come it took them that long to build a Death Star? And now to get these fun canon answers, or just more, and to tie it into the big picture of the Empire just putting that foot down, it works for me on a lot of levels.
Yeah, absolutely. This is my final note in the canon section here, Ken. Blurgs, now the most featured animal in Star Wars.
Yes, that's my final note too. 3 exclamation points.
Be happy to see the Blurgs again.
I was. Also, there's a Crash Y-Wing. I just like seeing Crash Y-Wings, I guess. Yeah, no, it takes on even more meaning now. I mean, you know, well, their first appearance is with the Ewok movies, right? I mean, I don't remember that. The Clone Wars Rebels here, and Mando taking the cake. It's just so fun. I can't help but smile at Blurgs.
Yep. I fully expect to see both Kenobi and Andor ride a Blurg. That's just, it is the way of things. Dun, 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 dun. Besides the crash Y-Wing, any other canon thoughts?
No, I mean, big stuff. I mean, right from the start, you know, you're going to Lesu and you're going to Ryloth. I mean, you just knew it's a big part of the Star Wars story, a big part of what happens, both in the Clone Wars and now going forward and it leading to Hera and the Rebellion. So it was great to see all the connections.
Yeah, absolutely. So was there anything in this episode then that you disliked or questioned?
No, I mean, the big thing is the Bad Batch making a cameo in their own show. But like I said, it did not hit me till the end. I almost didn't want this episode to end. There were so many good things. And then when it ends and it's on Hera and it kind of fades out, that's when I was like, oh, okay, what do I think about that? And if you take a moment and take a breath, you get the big picture. I'm excited to see an arc. And, you know, we've talked about this the old Clone Wars style of two or three, four arc episode runs there. You know, we're going to get that here. I think we're going to get a specific direct connection. The show's done a great job of each week picks up right away and moves you along. But you get this one, you get a sense a little time has passed for the Bad Batch, maybe a day or two at least. I don't know, a lot of Mantel mix had for this mission. And I at the end of the day, I really like what that does for the show.
Yeah, me too. I think it was a big swing, but it absolutely worked for me. And I'm excited for the cliffhanger. I think the other thing for me is I really did like that Crosshair was there because that did keep it tied into this overall story too. And you got that sense of like, we're following the Bad Batch and that is mostly, you know, our heroic members, but Crosshair is a member of the Bad Batch and he's there and he is leading things. I'm curious to see where the next episode goes. I was wondering if at any point in the episode, as it became clear and like, we're really going from Hera's perspective, for Cham's perspective. And this is going to be, you know, by about halfway through the episode, I was like, I think this is going to be a Bad Batch cameo episode.
Yeah.
I was wondering like, are we going to see a little bit more from Crosshair's perspective in any way? Like, and it might just be that he doesn't have a perspective because he's got an inhibitor chip and he's just like, I'm going to follow everyone and kick everyone's ass. And, you know, I want to control and be a good soldier and dominate, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe there's nothing more to dive into yet until he gets confronted by his old friends. But I like that Crosshair was there. And that was the only thing I was like, ooh, could there have been a little bit more? But I'm curious to see where that goes.
No, I'm with you on that. I kind of was laughing. I was like, this is the most Crosshair we've gotten in a way from the big turn, right? And then I just saw him. There's one point, there's a great shot and he like walks out and he's just kind of following. And I just saw him as a tool, just a tool of the Empire. And he maybe at this point he can't help it or can't help it a certain degree, but it was sad in a way. And so I'll take it and I'll wait for that big Crosshair, introspective tone poem episode.
And I did like the continuity of seeing that, his injuries, you know, cause when last we saw him, Crosshair looked like he was cosplaying Dengar.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've kind of hinted at it. Let's talk about hopes for next episode. This is pretty much a direct cliffhanger, or it's kind of weird if it wouldn't be, if like, well, they're chasing Hera. Anyway, this is going to be a comedy episode next week about Wrecker opening a Mantel mix stand. If they go away from Hera being chased by Hauser, the clone who seems to care about her, that would be a hell of a thing.
Yeah.
So it seems like we're picking up on that cliffhanger. Do you have hopes about where it's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, this idea of, you know, Sid is a rebel, which I say very general. It's not, again, not a prediction, but just like a lot of people calling her with different needs, but a lot of them seem to be on the outs of the Empire, which just might speak to just, you know, it's a criminal underworld. You're going to fight whoever's in charge, I guess. I don't know. But I love the idea of that's kind of the next mission. You know, you're not just bringing arms. You got to go save someone's daughter, you know, like, and you talk about no choice is a choice, but now this is your job and to see up front, maybe even a little closer level. They've seen some things already, the Bad Batch. Hunter's got enough evidence to make the decision. He just doesn't want to make it. So is he in some sort of denial? And is he faced with that in this episode?
Yeah, I kind of think that's where it's going to go, that Hera will make it to, you know, other members of Twilight, of the Free Ryloth movement, if they've branded themselves that way yet, if they have that name yet, and that call will go out to Sid for help, because that seems to be their contact, and that the Bad Batch will find themselves on another mission where it's like, oh, we're rescuing a kid? you're getting involved in the fight against the Empire.
Yeah.
And then I think I'm very interested to see if this is an episode next week that is framed from the perspective of telling the Ryloth story, that it is about Hera, that it is about Cham and Orn Fritah, or if the Bad Batch does come swooping in to rescue Hera, if this is going to evolve into the beginning of a showdown between Bad Batch and Crosshair.
I think we have to start building to that soon, right? Sooner than later, just really putting them in the same space more and more than they already have been. So yeah, I could see that. It'd be really weird if we don't get the Bad Batch too much next week, right? Right? Like it would be.
Maybe, but
maybe. I don't know, because I really love what I got.
I know that this is not an anthology show. It's called The Bad Batch. That said, you know, The Clone Wars, starring Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka, for the most part, you know, also did four episodes of R2 leading a droid squad, right? You know, I know they're not the same, and I'm not comparing them. But I don't think it is beyond the realm of possibility that the Bad Batch plays a small role, or even if they're there, that the perspective of the story is our Ryloth characters, our Twilight characters.
Right. Yeah, I agree with them.
But I kind of think that they are going to lean into it a little bit more. I think one thing that I'm really curious about is I do want to see the Bad Batch decide whether or not they're going to try to save Crosshair. Because at one point they just expressed that they're going to, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now that they know about getting chips out, you know, are they going to make that a priority at some point? Are they, you know, I think that's where my mind is going, is if they're on Ryloth and they know Crosshair's there, are they going to say, we have a mission of our own too, we're going to get his chip out?
Yeah.
And then I think the really interesting thing to me with these big themes is, if they get Crosshair's chip out, are these decisions just the inhibitor chip? Or is that who he's become? Is he going to choose power and control and domination of his own free will?
It would be very interesting to me if that's kind of where they go for a couple seasons. You know what I mean? Like, again, this little moment, I don't know if you remember the show, like it's just like an overhead kind of shot. And he kind of walks out, he's following everybody. And I was like, he is really a tool of the Empire. And if they lean into that and he ends up emerging as some sort of, villain, boss on a level here, essentially, I'd be intrigued by that. And maybe there's some redemption later on. I don't know. But we won't know until they're sitting across from each other again, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking forward to that. Anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, I made sure I got that Y-Wing in there. Rest in peace, Y-Wing. I don't know your story, but you look, you know, they're so busy they can't even give you a proper burial. I feel you, Y-Wing. It's okay.
Yeah, we'll check Wikipedia and see if we know the entire history of that Y-Wing from a story that we're not currently remembering. Two things for me. Gobi's ship is awesome. That's just a great, great Star Wars design, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sounds weird. It looked great coming and going. It looked cool from the front. It looked cool from the back. It looked like two different ships from different angles. It was great. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah.
Then the other thing I wanted to mention about this episode, and we've had this visual a couple episodes of a leader on a kind of a high place talking down to the group of people, kind of just desperately trying to sell the Empire.
Yeah.
We've talked so much about the beauty in the animation and the advancement in what they can do with facial expressions and with the backgrounds. There's also this great extra flex of like, look how many extras we can have in crowd scenes.
Oh yeah. Probably cheaper to make the backgrounds. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really great that we can tell this big story because we can afford huge crowds to boo the Empire.
Yeah. And the little moments they can do, there was one of the lights, the flashlight, right? And then Cham's got his hand up and you hear the click of the flashlight and a good old rack folk. I was like, they're just loving what they could do now.
It's so beautiful. A great job, everyone involved. As always, we're going to wrap up our episode with the fun question of toys. If you could have a toy or a figure inspired by this episode, who or what do you want, Ken?
I think we need young Hera and Chopper, or maybe a young Hera and Omega Tupac, right? I mean, I sometimes try to be fun and a little snarky with it. That seems like what we need. We just need it.
Absolutely. We really, really need that. I think... I think it's only a matter of time until Hasbro Labs does a big, you know, crowdfunding campaign to make the Marauder.
Yeah.
And it'll come with Gonky. You'll be able to, you know, decorate Omega's room how you want. It'll be so great. So I want that. I want that 2-pack. And then the other thing I need is a vintage 3 3/4 action figure called Battle Damaged Ornfrita with a with a wound.
With thunking sound effect.
A figure falls over on its own.
Its hand twitches. You cart it away.
Even darker. Even darker. Well, this was a dark episode with some moments of hopes and dreams and levity. So I think that is a good place to leave it. Any other thoughts, Ken?
No, I just, hey, this show continues to reward me. I love that we're here for this journey, but if you have a friend out there who's a big Star Wars fan and hasn't taken the big leap, just sell them on it. Sell them on it. I've done it to a few friends, and I've gotten a lot of texts this past week of, you're right, this show's great. And I really believe in what they're doing on Bad Batch.
That's great. Yeah, I'm loving it too. So with that, Ken, you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. We are the Force Center Podcast, and we are at Force Center Pod on Twitter. We are also on Instagram and YouTube. You can also find us on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. You can get an audiobook at us on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can find the podcast in a lot of different spots, including Spotify and now Amazon Music. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Support us at the top tier. Get exclusive trading cards of me, Joseph, and Jennifer Landa, designed by the great Brian Ward. Follow me at Catnapsuck, or go to my website, catnapsuck.com, where you can get information for upcoming stand-up comedy shows like July 24th at the El Corazon Theater in Seattle, Washington, with Mark Ellis and Daniel Bridge-Gadd.
Excellent. Excellent.
And you...
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures, including my other podcast, Obsessed. I cover a lot of different things on Obsessed, but we also like to cover some of the big, exciting new movies in the genre world. I'm a big MCU fan, so my wife and I are going to do a podcast discussing Black Widow that, as of this recording, we saw last night. So if you're interested in checking that out, you can find a link to Obsessed on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for the wonders of Chopper, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.